If you have a Bible, I'm just going to read a few verses from Acts chapter 2. For most of you, they'll be very, very familiar verses. They're verses about the first church as it began to grow. Acts chapter 2, starting to read at verse 42. We're putting together some of the thoughts over the last 4 weeks and what they looked like in the early church and what they could and should look like for us. Acts 2:42. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. This is very often a few verses that pastors use to get the church revved up. It's an inspiring passage from the scriptures because it kind of looks at church how it really could be and should be. I wonder what would go on your list if you were thinking of the perfect church. Warm and welcoming, vibrant but reverent and intimate worship, sound but relevant and dynamic teaching, involved in the community but not compromised by the community. Excellent but not exclusive. Strong leadership but not inflexible leadership. People zealous and committed but not legalistic. People warm and inclusive but not liberal. Real people with real faith in a real world. I was once leading a church leaders seminar, and we did an exercise about what the perfect church should be like. And then I asked people if they'd ever come across a church like that. And then I said to them, and do you know what you should do if you do come across a church like that? And they said, no, what should we do? I said, well, don't join it because you'll wreck it. It's possibly a little bit naughty, but I wanted to make a point. Real people are full of weaknesses and inconsistencies. And if we expect perfection from others when we can't come up with perfection ourselves, it's a recipe for frustration and disappointment. Churches are full of the quirkiness that comes from having people in them. You remove the people, you wouldn't have the problems, but you wouldn't have the church either. Because church and people are inextricably linked. We don't just belong to the church, we are the church. This is it, folks. Our guest publication this morning is Church New Sheet Bloopers. All of the notices I'm going to read out to you today have been written. Some of them have been read out loud. There are even more that I couldn't share with you this morning on the grounds of decency. None of them have come from our own new sheet, but they demonstrate our humanity all too well and help add to the cynical worldview of the church. Here's a few for you. The Low Self-Esteem Support Group will meet Thursday, 7 p.m. Please use the back door. The ladies of the church have cast off clothing of every kind. They may be seen in the basement on Friday afternoon. This evening at 7 p.m. there will be hymn sing in the park across from the church. Please bring a blanket and come prepared to sin. Miss Charlene Mason sang, I Will Not Pass This Way Again, giving obvious pleasure to the congregation. Ladies, don't forget the rummage sale. It's a chance to get rid of those things not worth keeping around the house. Don't forget your husbands. We stay only too aware of our shortcomings and our weaknesses, but that shouldn't lead us to the same world-weary cynicism as non-Christians when we look at the church. We will always struggle, we will always fall, we will always fail, but we aspire to something wonderful. to being God's expression of his kingdom here on earth, to becoming more like Jesus through the Spirit's power at work in us, to being true family. And this passage helps us look at the principles of church that can help us become more like our ideals and less like our nightmares. Four things about the early Christians who formed the early church for us to take to heart. The first is this, that they were devoted. Here was an announcement about a national prayer and fasting conference. The cost for attending the fasting and prayer conference includes meals. It really makes you think, doesn't it? We do have a tendency to make it easy for ourselves. We have a conference on fasting, but we don't fast. We keep things at a safe and comfortable distance. But at the heart of this new community was the word devoted. It's the word that we use about couples who've been together for years and years and years, don't we? It's the word that we use about a person who's nursed their partner or parent or child through years of illness. Selfless love. It's the word that we use for a dog that follows its master everywhere and gazes at him with those big brown eyes even when he's being shouted at. That's how the early Christians were when it came to following Jesus and all that meant. They devoted themselves, it says. And the root of that word is to be, there's another word called to adhere or be constant, to be attentive to give care to persevere and not give up. These are all a sense of what devoted means, to be in constant readiness. Put that in modern language because that was a little bit, you know, to stick like glue. To have your eye on it all the time. To keep going all the time. Not to pack in when it's hard. To be watching out. To be eager. To be ready. To be can't wait to learn more and know more. So what were they doing that with? They were devoted. They stuck like glue. They couldn't wait. They were eager. They persevered. With what? With Jesus. The apostles' teaching. The fellowship. The breaking of bread. And prayer. Learning about Jesus, fellowship with the Christian family, remembering what he did, what he said, praying. We'll be looking at fellowship later, but that kind of picture of the way they viewed the fundamentals of faith was crucial to the kind of people they were. Couldn't wait to learn more. They were reading, they were taking it on board. When they ate together, they remembered the Last Supper. They thought about what Jesus had done, his love for them. They thought about his promise to return. It filled them with hope, with love, with a sense of purpose. You couldn't stop them praying together. They were at it every day. And for us, often the case is that we've lost that sense of devotion. We do become jaded and cynical and world-weary. Listen to the preacher and go, Acts 2, 42-47? Must have heard that 20 times. Nothing new. We think about the prayer meeting and we feel tired just at the thought. Communion is either formalized and funereal or a cursory meal. We point to busy lives. We point to the pressure of work. We point to family life, the stresses and strains of contemporary living. And these things are true. But I just want to remind you, it wasn't exactly a picnic for the early church either. They didn't have modern conveniences to speed them up. Did you know that? Work was hard. Did you know that? A good number of them were slaves. Many of them were manual workers. Most of them didn't have a day off at all. Their prayer meetings, their meals, their teaching fitted around a full day's work. That's why some of them fell out of the windows because they went to sleep because they were exhausted when Paul was going on and on and had to be raised from the dead again. It's quite a story back at work. What did you do last night? I fell out of a window and died. And then I was raised. Oh, what did you do? Oh, what's the footy? A key difference for many of them was that they were devoted. It was number one passion in their lives. And for us, there are so many things to take our attention. So many distractions, leisure, more and more creative ways to have fun, work, career, profits, target-orientated. Time with God, something that we squeeze in if we can. Sundays are nowhere near as entertaining or well-presented as Saturday nights. We can't do high definition. That's because my sight's going. Prayer meetings seem strangely out of place in our world of activity. And there are two things about that. Firstly, the church does have a responsibility to be relevant and to be more relevant. I can remember talking to one businessman and he talked about his church experience and he said, there's not one thing I have heard that's got anything whatsoever to do with my world outside church. And there are times when churches can be irrelevant. And we have a responsibility as leaders and pastors to be relevant and also to demonstrate a passion that's infectious. But we also need to take our responsibility seriously to be devoted. Stop being so easy on ourselves, excusing our own laziness. Stop leaning on others and expecting them to live out our spiritual lives for us. If we have struggles to overcome our pride and shame and embarrassment and get help instead of nursing our hurts and failures without doing anything about them. To stick to God like glue, to have our eyes on Him all the time, to keep going in our faith all the time, not to pack in when it's hard, to have a passion that means when I ask you, what do you go to sleep thinking about? What do you wake up thinking about? What consumes your time in the day? That reveals something to you about your love for God. And if the answer to that question is something else, you maybe need to do some business with God. Keep going in faith, not pack in. Watch out, be eager, be ready, be can't wait to learn, know, to know more, to put faith into action, to impact our world, to have any sense of conviction as Christians. For people to want what we have, a key element is that we're devoted. That knowing and loving and serving God matters. It communicates through our struggles and failures. But if we don't care, and it doesn't really matter, we can use a million clever words and it'll make no difference. So let's ask God to help us have a restored passion and excitement and devotion to Him. Let's ask God to show us the things that get in the way of that. Let's ask Him what we need to do. Secondly, they were prepared. It's not exactly the right word, but we'll explain that in a moment. Here's a few more little news sheet articles. The vicar will preach his farewell message, after which the choir will sing Break Forth into Joy. One of my favourites, Bertha Belch, a missionary from Africa, will be speaking tonight. Come and hear Bertha Belch all the way from Africa. Potluck supper, Sunday, 5 p.m. Prayer and medication to follow. I think it was meditation. Church has become a place that people make fun of. Vicars and pastors who are boring, caricatured on telly. Second-rate meals followed by cheap coffee in chip mugs. Weak orange juice for the kids and plain biscuits. A chocolate and jam-free zone. Congregations who come to be entertained and don't get entertained very well. And at the end they go away no different, remembering nothing, learning nothing, hoping that next week won't be so bad but without any real hope. When a real encounter with the living God could be so different. But are we prepared for an encounter with the living God? Do we come ready to hear and receive and be used by God? What would happen if God did speak in power this morning? Would we ignore it? Would we fob it off? Would we welcome it? The early church were experiencing signs, wonders, and miracles. They couldn't wait to meet together to see what God might be doing. They weren't going, oh no, it's raining. They were saying, God's here. We've got to get there. They were amazed, it says. They held God in awe and holy fear and the greatest respect. Verse 43, everyone was filled with awe. Many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. They were ready to listen, to really hear. They were the kind of material God could work with. Open, expecting, prepared. And I just want to say to you, I wonder if you expect anything to happen this morning. When you meet with God here on a Sunday in your little church, in your time with God, do you expect anything? If you expect to hear from God, have you asked Him to speak to you? I wonder if you expect other Christians to impact your life today, or if you expect that you might impact theirs. I wonder if you've come with questions that you believe God can answer, needs that you believe God can meet. I wonder if you really believe that God lives in the praises of His people, that you are and can be filled with the Holy Spirit and become more like Jesus. And the challenge to us all is not to limit God by our own expectations, our own weaknesses, our own struggles, our own temptations, our own sins. Isn't God greater? Our failed relationships and friendships. Isn't God greater? I just want to ask, it'll only take hopefully 20 seconds. If you have ever encountered God in a way that could only have been supernatural. So something has happened in your life, whether it's physical healing or emotional healing, something or freedom, it's happened in your life that only could have happened by supernatural means. Would you stand now? Just take a look around. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? Yeah? Please sit down. Those of you who are still sitting down, you forgot about salvation. That's completely supernatural. Just thought I'd remind you about that as well. Listen to these words from a song which many of you'll remember from about 10 years ago. Be still, for the power of the Lord is moving in this place. He comes to cleanse and heal, to minister His grace. No work too hard for Him. In faith, receive from Him. Be still, for the power of the Lord is moving in this place. Let's be a people who are prepared, who come believing in a mighty God who can change things and change lives and change us. Let's be open to His work in our lives and believe that nothing's too hard for Him. Let's reach out in faith and receive from Him. Be devoted, be prepared. Thirdly, be united. I couldn't believe that this one was true, but it was. The peacemaking meeting scheduled for today has been cancelled due to conflict. The church will host an evening of fine dining, superb entertainment, and gracious hostility. I think that was supposed to be hospitality. Several years ago, they did some major studies on prisoners of war to determine what methods used by the enemy had been the most effective in breaking their spirit. And they quickly found that most people didn't break down from physical deprivation or torture as quickly as they did from solitary confinement or from disrupted friendship. We're made for community. We're made for relationship. In our spiritual battles, we need fellowship. We need it. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Now that word together, one mind, one accord, one passion, it's a unique Greek word. It's used 10 of its 12 New Testament times in this particular way. It's the word is homothumaden. You don't need to know that, but what you do need to know is what it means. It's a compound of two words. It means to run along and in unison. To run along or to rush along in unison. When I was in my early 20s, my brother and I used to weekly, sometimes a couple of times a week, we used to run. We had the most stupid course to run on because it was effectively downhill for 2 miles, So you went straight downhill, got completely out of breath from the start, from going too fast, and then uphill for the other 2 miles coming back. And so we would run together, downhill 2 miles, uphill 1¾ miles, pause to vomit, and then the final quarter of a mile back. And I have to say, in terms of our record, I vomited a lot more than my brother, so I think I was clearly was trying harder. But the point is, we ran in step. Sometimes one of us would hold back, sometimes the other would. Sometimes one would be pushing the other one on, sometimes that swapped round. And the aim was for us to complete our course in the best time together. Sure, on many occasions one of us could have done better than the other, but that wasn't the deal. That wasn't being together, that wasn't unity. And that is the sense of what unity means in this passage. It means putting the needs of the two or the three or the four above our own and actually achieving more together than we would achieve separately. They met together. They shared their possessions together. They ate together. Their aim was to complete the course in the best way together. They understood that what they had materially, what they had in terms of gifting, wasn't theirs. It didn't belong to them. It wasn't theirs to choose. They were stewards and caretakers of their gifts. They had a responsibility to use them for the good of others. And in this church, running in step for some will mean slowing down to run alongside, rather than running on impatiently and going, they don't get it, they don't get it. I'm off in my spiritual superior way to be blessed. I'm sure no one would do that. It means pausing when others feel that they can't take another step. That takes patience and gentleness and self-control. For some, it'll mean pushing on to make sure you're not holding other ones up, which will take discipline and commitment and sacrifice. For others, it's having the courage to push the pace and risk the occasional moans of others. But that happens out of relationships and friendships, caring, open, real people. It's a cliche, but it's true. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. It's no use spouting information out if there's no love. And caring may mean giving money. It may mean sharing possessions. It may mean giving what for you is even more valuable, and that's time. It may mean opening your home or opening your hearts or making yourself vulnerable, getting beyond those facades we talked about last week. Have you got real friendships in the context of the church? People you're running in step with? What are you doing to reach out to others? What are you doing to make it easy for people to reach out to you? Because people often don't reach out if there's no permission. In a Peanuts cartoon, Lucy demands that Linus changes the TV channel, threatening him with her fist if he doesn't. What makes you think you can walk right in here and take over, says Linus. These 5 fingers, says Lucy. Individually, they're nothing. But when I curl them together like this into a single unit, they form a weapon that's terrible to behold. Which channel do you want, says Linus. Turning away, he looks at his fingers and says, why can't you guys get organized like that? There's a terrific power in being united. And I guess there are times when we look at the church and we go, why can't you guys get organized like that? We all do that. We're a church that's under spiritual attack because we're seeking to reach out. We need to be aware that the enemy's key strategy is to bring division. So we must choose to organize ourselves for unity, taking time to build bridges, to mend fences, to work on communication when it's broken down. Commit to running along in unison, keeping in step, working out what we need to do for that to happen. Unity and love isn't some wishy-washy, bind-us-together hand-holding thing. Can you imagine Peter, the disciple? One day he's cut off someone's ear, the next day he's holding hands and singing bind-us-together. It's not going to happen, is it? Love isn't just about going, oh, I really love you. That's not what we're talking about. It's real. It's practical. Sometimes it's tough and challenging. I believe that there is at least one person here today. You're afraid of being real because you actually believe that if you're real, people won't accept you the way you are. While there's not the real you there, you can always have that little bit of security. But that's a road to nowhere. And the root of it is either fear or pride. And God's challenging you to take a risk today. To reach out. Ask him about who you reach out to. And I believe you'll find it to be the road to freedom, not humiliation. Be who you are so that people can love you. And you've got pain in your eyes because you're presenting one thing and there's a struggle going on beneath. Reach out and you'll find that people will love you for who you are, not just who you pretend to be. Finally, the church were admired. Bloopers at the evening service tonight. The sermon topic will be, what is hell? Come early and listen to our choir practice. Barbara remains in hospital and needs blood donors for more transfusions. She's also having trouble sleeping and requests tapes of the pastor's sermons. Admired, the church is so often more like tolerated or ridiculed or thought of as being boring or irrelevant. Verse 47, praising God, enjoying the favor of all the people, the Lord adding to their number daily those who are being saved. A sincere fellowship is attractive. That genuineness is attractive. People want to know the source of it. That helps church growth more than anything. In the early church, there weren't insiders or outsiders. There were no charter members on Pentecost. They were all the in crowd because they were all in Christ. They are from different nations. They spoke different languages. Their cultural dress would have been different, but Jesus broke down barriers. It's sadly true that though many Christians are respected, much less are admired or liked, and even less are the kind of people that others truly want to be like. I spent nearly 10 years traveling around schools and colleges in a kind of Christian rock band, and we used to do loads of lessons and do concerts, and probably the question we were asked most went like this: following Jesus sounds great, but do we have to be like Christians to do it? It's a bit of an ouch, isn't it? And we had to explain the difference between religion, religiosity, and living faith. And Christians can come across as pompous or holier than thou or repressed or false. And folk look at how we are with each other. They look at how we are in the community and they say, thanks but no thanks. The Holy Spirit at work in our lives doesn't turn us into miserable clones. He sets our personalities on fire. He sets us free to be who we were designed to be. Let me tell you, Christians should be more fun at parties. And they don't need solvent abuse to help them to be more fun at parties. Because we're more interesting and interested, because we're full of life and vitality, because we're passionate about faith and passionate about life, because we're prepared to see God at work, to see him do great things and to be part of that, because we really love and care and are one. There is no such thing as having a boring testimony. It's just boring Christians. And I wonder, are you a boring Christian? Do you go around apologizing for the best thing in the world? I went hang gliding, sorry, I went to church. What did you do? Oh, yeah, I got healed. Sorry, don't mean to be a bore talking about my faith. Let's stop apologizing for the best thing in the world. Let's stop getting all starchy and stiff when we talk about freedom. Let's ask God to help us become more and more winsome and attractive, and not by compromise, so that people want to know how they can be more like us, and we can point them to the reason we are. And that's Jesus. Of course, these principles are not the answer to everything, because when you come back next week, it's still going to be us. And some of us we like more than others. And some people like doing some things more than others. And some people talk in very different ways. And you know, we're going to be the same church. And if you look at the church in Acts, the same church doing the same things was also hated and also persecuted. And people left them instead of joining them. And there was error and division and confusion that crept in at times. It has done since, and it will do again. And that takes us back to devotion. So that when things are hard, when things go wrong, it doesn't all crumble around us. We stick to God like glue. We have our eyes on Him all the time. We stick to each other like glue. We keep going in our faith all the time. We don't pack in when it's hard. We watch out. We're eager. We're ready. We can't wait to learn more and know more. To put our faith into action and not just discuss it. To truly take into our hearts the truth that knowing and loving and serving God matters above all. And that be something that communicates above all our struggles and failures. And that's the raw material God can work with to make something amazing. In a moment we're going to worship together. But out of it, I want to ask one particular question. At the heart of this, of what really is true community church, a church that has those elements to it, a church that is devoted, a church that is prepared and has that expectation, a church that is united, a church that then can be something that's admired and actually attractive. I want to know, are you devoted? Do you want to be? What are you devoted to? And I believe God's got a specific word for one person, and we'll make time, if there are any other words, just before we worship. And that is that what's been going on in your life over the last few weeks and months, if you pause to think for a moment, has shown you that you are devoted to something else. Something else is more important to you than God. And you keep pressing that down because it's an uncomfortable thought. But the pressure that you are under now is because actually you are choosing something else above God. And that makes it an idol. That makes it an idol. And unless that idol is smashed, you'll never find the peace or the fulfillment that you're looking for. And you've been niggled about this. You've thought, is this too important to me? No. I'm just sorting it out for now. But God says it's an idol and it needs to be broken. So if that's a word for you, please receive it and act on it. If anyone else has anything to bring before we worship, then please come now. We do believe that God speaks today, both through His timeless word, the Bible, and through the spiritual gifts of prophecy and the words of knowledge and discernment.